You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm joined today by Dr. Matthew Johnson to discuss all the goings-on international. So, Dr. Johnson, how are you doing today? Pardon me. It looks like I need another cup of coffee to focus my brain a little bit, but how are you this morning?
No, we're in the same boat there. Yeah. I'm hanging in there.
Well, hey, that's all we can do, right? You just you keep pushing on. I know that you've been in my prayers, a lot of our listeners' prayers, because you've been having some health issues. So, of course, we're going to keep on praying for you for a swift recovery. But that just gives you more time to be able to focus on maybe another book. You know, there a lot of people always ask me when your next book is coming out. So maybe this will give you some time to focus on some of the new ideas and be able to get even more content into the hands of people, because as we know, you know, when you've got embassies buying cases of your books, your words are being heard not only here, not only on the Orthodox Nationalist, but you know, around the entire globe. So it's a pretty exciting thing, and you know, thank you as always for your contributions. Now to kick things off, I want. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Johnson.
No, I said that's absolutely that's true. My body's been very good to me. I'm 45 years old, and I've never been in a hospital. They have been sick, so I can't really complain.
Well, glad that you're in good health. Now, we are talking about Syria, just to kick things off. So there's been a suicide bombing that just happened in Damascus. So at least 30 people have been killed, according to state media. And so this is happening. Now we're entering the seventh year of the civil war. Which, of course, is not a civil war. Something I found interesting on the Fox News story about this, they actually list not only the Islamic State and the al-Nusra Front, but the Free Syrian Army under their deadly terrorist groups that are active in Syria. So that is kind of exciting that the Free Syrian Army, you know, of course, we've been talking about the fact that that's simply a front for ISIS, is now being classified by the, you know, conservative Republican press as being a terrorist organization. But we go ahead and we have another terrorist attack here in Damascus, which is different. You know, of course, there's been plenty of attacks over the past 7 years, but, you know, ISIS has been trying to fight an actual ground war, an actual ground campaign, and it hasn't been going so hot for them, especially in recent months now that, you know, with Donald Trump, things have really changed in actually supporting the Syrian army with our airstrikes instead of not helping them whatsoever. And of course, the Russian presence has been very, very positive. So I want your thoughts on, it looks like possibly ISIS turning back into being more of a traditional terrorist organization instead of trying to have a ground army, because they're getting routed, you know, city after city by Iraqi forces, which I don't know how that happens, because the Iraqi military is not a very talented military these days, by the Iraqis, by the Russians, by the Syrians, by Hezbollah. That they're being pushed back. So now it looks like they might be transferring into a terrorist model. So what do you think this tells us about Syria, and what do you think this means for the future?
Well, I think you know that back in 1990, I had a Syrian phase. I almost ended up specializing in it. And I knew that there was something special there because of the nationalist ideology of the Assad family. And that they were very pro-Christian, they protected them, and that he was from a sect of the Alawite sect that really isn't very Islamic, and so looked for allies elsewhere. The big issue with Syria is that it was on the verge of becoming, what did you say, 7 years? It was on the verge of becoming a first world economy. It was just on that cusp. Assad's reforms, foreign investment, he controlled inflation, the peasants owned land, all of this, and his father did the same, first world military, and that's what Israel feared. That's what the regime feared, that becoming a first world economy, as Saddam Hussein in Iraq, That's real heartbreak here. That's the real destruction here. It has, though, forced Syrians to consolidate their forces. Speaking of books, my latest book is The Foreign Policy of Mass Society, which is published on Hromada Press. And it deals, it's essays written some time ago, but it deals with precisely these issues. The U.S. destroyed all of its credibility when it supported Al-Qaeda. All of a sudden, it went from blaming them for 9/11 to giving them money. And it shows you who rules, the John McCain types, and they have no loyalty whatsoever. But now I predicted an Assad victory 2 years ago, and I was, I kept saying the war's over. But I think actually now it is.
They've been keeping this war going for such a long time by, it isn't a civil war. I mean, when you're flooding in Wahhabi jihadists from around the entire globe, you can kill a whole host of them, but the system keeps bringing more and more of them in. I mean, the Russians, although I do, they've gotten some criticism in the media, but I think it's a pretty good plan that, of course, Chechnya now is, a relatively happy part of the Russian Federation. But, what's happened with the Chechens is there are some that, still are dedicated to terrorism and all those sorts of things. And some of them have been allowed to go to Syria, and then the FSB stops their passports from allowing them back in. So then the Russian military can deal with them, fighting them as jihadists in Syria. But, I mean, it really is. We're talking about thousands and thousands of fighters from Europe, thousands of fighters from around the world who are flooding in, not just from the Middle East, but from the Western world. They've artificially propped this up, not only with the Obama administration giving guns, giving support, giving all the sorts of infrastructure. You had the Turks buying oil from ISIS at rock bottom prices, which of course was helping them economically, and was keeping money in the coffers of ISIS. But the flood of fighters, that if this was a civil war, this would have been over 5 years ago, but it isn't a civil war. It's an international, conflict, in which the internationalists have been bringing in fighters from all around the globe to try and fight Assad and try and stop the Syrian government from being able to have control. It is not a civil war, and it really is a global campaign against the Syrian government.
And it shows you the hatred that the system has for those who maintain state control over currency and energy flows, and those who say that economic growth is not to be done according to Western, liberal models. There's a whole ideology behind American foreign policy in the, its defense structure and all the documents. And I mentioned this in my book, the primary concern is that they're not allowed to say these things. There is only one way for development, and that is the liberal way. The hatred of this man and it starts off with the Civil War, and then, but it shows you the professionalism. And it was the first world military up until recently. And it's maintained itself. It's maintained its integrity. The SAA is one of the most respectable institutions in the world, in my opinion.
Well, and speaking of people that are hated, of course, it's such a great thing to be able to see Assad and the Baathists to be pushing closer and closer to victory in Syria. That's going to be a very exciting thing for stability in the Middle East, for peace, and of course to have a nationalist government in Syria that survived a crucible. I mean, a really fiery crucible in which the Syrian nation has come together, and their identity, I think, is far stronger, and they've sacrificed to be able to have their nation and be able to keep control over their nation. This is going to be a good thing long term. It's very exciting to see them pushing towards victory. But people that are hated, I want to talk about Donald Trump, because of course the media hates Donald Trump. They loathe Donald Trump. And yesterday, Rachel Maddow was talking about, we have Trump's tax returns. We have Trump's tax returns. And Hillary Clinton said, Donald Trump doesn't pay any taxes throughout the entire election. And that's what the media said. They said, Donald Trump, release your taxes. Release your taxes. Come on now, release your taxes, because we know you're not paying any taxes. And it turns out, from the 2005 taxes that were leaked somehow to Rachel Maddow, that he made $153 million in 2005, and paid $36.5 million in income taxes, $38 million total in overall taxes. And that's close to 25% of his income. He's paying 25% right there in income, and Bernie Sanders, it looks like, was paying about 13% in income tax on his income, and Donald Trump's even paying more percentage wise than the media conglomerates that have been attacking him, saying that he doesn't pay his taxes. So I want to get your thoughts on that. I mean, how the media just lies and it lies and it lies and it lies, saying Donald Trump didn't pay any taxes, using that against him, saying that, oh, he doesn't understand what it's like to have a tax burden, middle America. And it turns out he's paying more percentage wise than pretty much anyone. He's paying a tremendous amount of taxes, nearly European levels of taxation, $38 million in 1 year. So I want to get your thoughts on, first of all, Rachel Maddow making this like a big thing. And this is a Geraldo opening Al Capone's vault sort of moment. We have the tax returns, we have the documents, and it turns out he pays a lot of taxes. So I don't know how that does anything but help Donald Trump in any capacity, but they thought he was going to hurt him. But I want to know your thoughts on these taxes and basically bring it into a wider conversation about lies about Donald Trump.
Well, this has been, since his election, has been the most shocking aspect of American life. There's an unexplained innocence in my mind. The viciousness, the savagery, the total rejection of all standards in the press has been, beyond belief. They will say anything. They will do anything. They will be anything. They won't call him president. They call him Trump. Even Saturday Night Live has these, they're not even funny anymore, skits about him, just mocking him. He angered the regime in a way that just, it's white hot hatred. So there is no way that this guy is a stooge of anybody. There's no way. He's not perfect, of course, but, he has survived four assassination attempts so far. And I keep bringing you back to Richard Nixon in 1972, when he humiliated the left by destroying George McGovern. And they had to find something, some invention. And so they discovered Watergate. Well, Watergate had nothing to do with reelecting Nixon. Why would it be? He was a shoo-in in every state of the union. It had more to do with Dean's call girl service, and how that was ruling so much of the politicians in D.C. They used Nixon to cover that up. But we're in the same situation here. And they haven't found quite the Watergate yet, but I think they will.
Well, and of course, that's an attempt to try and destabilize things. Of course, I mean, we've talked about Nixon before. And, not a big fan of, plenty of Nixon's policies. I'm not going to be trying to put him on the $5 bill or anything like that after right. Our victory. But Nixon did, he called out everything, and he knew he was woke when it came to things like Bohemian Grove. The idea that all these elites, these financial elites and political elites, go into the woods and do bizarre naked rituals in front of giant owls. I mean, the stuff that you think is radical conspiracy theories till you've got tapes of the president of the United States saying, I believe his actual term was the faggiest thing he had ever seen. Calling out, we're talking about things in our modern society, whether it's child trafficking amongst the elites. There was a huge pedophile scandal in the British Parliament a few years ago that was exposed, that was going on for many years. Of course, homosexuality, that's rife within these political in-groups, masonry, all these different things that sound like crazy conspiracy theories. How could it be that there are secret societies doing crazy things like this, and you've got Nixon being like, oh, yeah, that's the faggiest place I've ever seen. And he was talking about knowing the Jews' role in the media, the Jews' role against him, and all these things. The tapes from Nixon really do reveal that, well, I don't think he was one of us. He wasn't a white nationalist, and he certainly right. wasn't 100% going to be putting our policies forward. But he was awakened to many of the issues of the deep state and, of course, the Jewish power structure that were working against him. So that's why he had to go. If you're woke and you're just going to not be on board, if you're not going to put your pinch of incense before the altar of the Jews, well, then they're going to try and take you down. And, speaking of taking people down, elections today, da-da-da-da. In the Netherlands, very exciting stuff. Now, Geert Wilders, another guy, having a lot of huge problems with, especially his support for Israel. don't like that. You know, everything is focused on Islam. When if you've got a problem with Islamic immigration into Europe, you have to be mad at the capitalists and the Jews that are bringing these people in the first place. You're identifying symptoms and not the cause. Of course, being a pro-Zionist is absolutely horrendous. But in the Netherlands, he is the best thing going on right now. And now the election today, voting is going on right now as we're talking. And I think it's really interesting to see how this election is going to turn out. And he was debating yesterday with the head of the labor movement there. The labor movement looks like it's going to get absolutely killed. It might lose 2/3 of its seats in the worst defeat ever, based on the current polling. And the head of the labor party said, "The Netherlands belongs to all of us, and everyone who does his best, of which Geert Wilders said, "The Netherlands is not for everyone. The Netherlands is for the Dutch." And of course, there's been the huge ruckus over the past week with Turkey, where Turkey wanted to go and bring in speakers to rile up the Turks in the Netherlands to get them to vote. And then, of course, Erdogan has called the Dutch Nazis. He's called the German Nazis. He's calling everyone Nazis. You know, everyone in Europe is a Nazi, basically. I don't really understand what Erdogan's plan is long term, because first he was backing the U.S. coalition in Syria, for instance, and then they shot down the Russian plane. Now he's trying to get back in with Russia. Now he's calling, all these governments Nazis and picking fights with the Dutch, which if Wilders wins, that probably isn't a good long-term plan for them. So I want to know your thoughts, first of all, on the Dutch elections, but then let's take this into Turkey, because Erdogan, I don't know what his strategy is, because he seems to try and be burning as many bridges as humanly possible.
Well, that's a good question. I'm no expert on Dutch politics, but it's the same situation there as you have in the rest of Europe. Massive debt, high unemployment that's not being reported by the press. They're changing those figures, manipulating those figures. I do know more about Turkey. Now, recently, Erdogan has threatened Europe with even a greater influx of Islamic immigrants, of migrants, suggesting that he has some control over this. Now, it wasn't that long ago, if he wanted a totally visa-free movement throughout the EU. And if he didn't get it, he would unleash this greater Islamic migrant movement.
But a mass migration of Turks from NATO does.
What?
I said a mass migration of orcs from Mordor, sending them into Gondor and Rohan to the men of the West, just unleashing all the orcs and sending them forth.
Well, the orcs were prettier, I guess.
and they didn't blow themselves up, so there's that.
that is true. That is true. I mean, I initially was a supporter of the Turkish government because they were willing, they were going to leave NATO. And they were working on a missile system with China. And then the so-called spontaneous color revolution began in Ankara 4 years ago now, 5 years ago. And he changed his tune. And then once he realized that he's not going anywhere with the Russia situation, he has now changed again. So the man has no principles. He's your classic politician. I'm not sure. Turkey has a very weird identity. They're very Islamic, but no Islamic politics. They're pro-Israel. You know, they're they're the Missouri of Middle East. So I'm not really sure what the game is, except that this man has a desire to hold on to power at all costs, and he realizes that there are two coalitions in the world. The first run by the U.S., the other run by Moscow. And that in and of itself is important.
Well, I mean, the long-term strategy, I mean, you're right when it comes to Turkish identity, because the whole thing was that they're going to be a secular state. And as time moves on, it seems like they're moving more towards a more Islamic fundamentalist position. I mean, yeah, it was bizarre when I was in Turkey, or as I like to call it, Eastern Greece, that, I mean, to look at everything that was going on, I mean, it was bizarre, you know, just to see from outside the airport, all the buildings with the Turkish flags. And if it was a European country, I'd be like, hell yeah, that's really exciting. But of course, Turkey is not European. But, you know, they had the attempted coup, which might not have been a coup at all. It might have just been done by the Erdogan government. It seemed like a very bizarre coup to try and happen. But they seem to be trying to straddle several different lines here. And I think they're going to fall between a couple of different stools, because long term, you can't be, you know, oh, Europe, we are secular. We want to join you in European values, and then be supporting, you know, a more Islamic fundamentalist position, you know, going against the constitution of Turkey that was supposed to be secular. It seems to me like they're having a real crisis of identity, and they don't really know where they're going to stand. And the last thing that's a good idea for them long term is to send more and more migrants into Europe, which is going to increase nationalist sentiment throughout Europe, and is going to turn Europe against Turkey. And then Turkey has done plenty of things against the Russian coalition. So I just don't feel like he might be able to hold power in Turkey. But Erdogan seems to be really isolating himself, which, you know, my end goal is a Greek liberation of Constantinople and a lot of Turkish territory. So if he wants to get rid of all of his allies, well, that's good. I like that. But, you know, when it comes to the deeper things, it doesn't seem like a very well thought out long-term strategy.
You're absolutely right. The central issue in Turkish politics is the army. It has the second most powerful military in NATO. It is highly professional. My father fought with them in Korea. And this coup, so incompetently done, I can't make sense out of it. All I know is that Erdogan purged all of his enemies from every institution in society. So if he didn't do it, at least he benefited from it. And of course, their connection with ISIS and any military connection with ISIS now has destroyed any credibility that they had. So the big central institution, the Turkish identity, the army, is now in trouble.
Well, hopefully it'll come to the point where there'll just be a junta. That's seems like that'd probably be the best thing for not only Europe but for Turkey as well, to get the military in charge. Usually, in pretty much any government, whether it's, you know, Asian countries or Arab countries or really any country, the military, you know, if you're a high-ranking military official in any form of professional military, you of course crave stability. You're usually a well-reasoned individual. You understand strategy, and Erdogan seems to be, you know, flipping off the handle. So maybe there'll be an actual coup at some point. Maybe that could be a good thing and help Turkey. But I want to bring things to France. Lots of things going on in France, of course. The battle between Le Pen and you know, fighting for the presidency of France. Interesting to see how things are going. You know, I've put my critiques forward of her support of French revolutionary values, Enlightenment values, on the show before. But something interesting happened in the campaign, that her main competitor, François Fillon, of the Conservative Party, has been charged officially with embezzlement. And he's already been running a bit of a rough campaign, but he has now been charged. He's under formal criminal investigation for you know, basically taking money from the public, you know, public coffers, and hiring members of his own family to do jobs. Now, I mean, that's nepotism, but if they were actually working, well, I mean, okay. I mean, if you're high ranking, whatever, hire your son to do something, you know, whatever. But they weren't even showing up. It was a job where his wife and two of his children were parliamentary aides, and they apparently weren't actually doing any work, but of course they were being paid for it. So huge scandal in France, which could mean moving forward in the election, this is going to be really the more nationalist leaning side versus the communists and the socialists and the greens and everyone like that on the left, that the mainstream conservatives have been blown out. They've been blown the frick out, you know, which is a good thing. You know, of course, because if Le Pen can get NATO, you know, get France out of NATO, can work against the European Union. She's already offered support to Eastern European countries that are a part of the European Union, that they wouldn't have to support bringing in more refugees. It's a pretty exciting thing. But I want to know your thoughts on the polarization of politics in France with this upcoming election.
I was just reading about the fact that he was funneling money to his wife, who was not showing up. She wasn't working. And you have a similar weird situation in South Korea, which means that the polarization speaks to violence in the future. But at the same time, conservatives are going to have to pick a side. Where they're going to go, and then local capital is going to have to pick a side too, and that's the most important thing. If the conservatives are not a part of this election, and this election is really about, you know, the ideology of France itself, then those choices are going to have to be made. And with the conservatives, that kind of buffering effect they have out of the way, it's positive for us. I've seen too many pictures of Paris and what the migrants have done to it, what's been done to it, and this is great. It's a positive thing for us.
Well, exactly, and you know, polarization is always a good thing because people, when they can't sit on the sidelines, pushing towards nationalism is the logical thing because our values are normal, natural, and healthy. I want to bring probably, I guess, for our last story, because we're coming to the end of the show, to talk about one last thing with Donald Trump, because we're talking about conspiracy. We're talking about conspiracy amongst the elites that are working against nationalism wherever they can. And Tucker Carlson, who's, you know, not one of us, but he's getting better. He's been doing some interesting things on Fox News. He brought forward on his show that the tape, of course, that was brought out of Donald Trump right before the election to try and, hurt his support with the women vote, which again, thank you, white women. 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump, so thank you for that. You went against all the programming of the feminists and the attacks, and you voted solidly in favor of a candidate that actually better reflected your values. But it's come out that NBC, they had the tape for a long time, and according to Tucker Carlson, they were hesitant to broadcast the tape for fear of being accused of partisanship. But as the reality of the tight race became apparent last fall, NBC rose to the defense of Hillary Clinton and leaked the tape. So this right here is such a clear thing that they understood that it would be partisan. They understood they'd be picking sides. But right before the election, when they saw it was going to be a close election, they wanted to run with something to try and derail Donald Trump. And Carlson said, NBC News lied to the public to help destroy a politician they didn't like. We know that. We know they wouldn't do it again, do we? Do we know they're not going to do it now? And I think this is a big question about the collusion between the Democrats, between, of course, we know the influence of George Soros, we know the influence of all the Jewish oligarchs, the capitalist oligarchs, and the media. They're all on the same side. But bringing all of this together, that they're actively working in collusion with one another to help their chosen candidates. The media is not the arbiter of free discussion. It's not just bringing the facts out there. No. They've got a clear political agenda. So, Dr. Johnson, I want to know your thoughts as we're coming to the end here about NBC actively colluding with the Democrats once they saw the election was going to be close to try and derail Trump.
Well, there was no question that the major news media, including Fox, was hostile towards Donald Trump. The New York Times, as you well know, officially abandoned nonpartisanship to promote American values, as they would call it. What did this man do to earn this? He threatened the system with slightly lowering the amount of cheap labor coolies he was going to import into the country. And as you know, it's been 40% fewer illegals crossing the border now than there was this time last year. It's about cheap labor. It's about serf conditions. It's about what capitalism has become.
Well, I mean, and that is a big thing. I mean, we're talking about Sir Oswald Mosley. With Sven early in the week, I included the Sir Oswald Mosley quote at the end that talked about what's being done with capital and how the British government or the American government or any government in the Western world, it's not about the people. It's about money. It's about the power of money and of money alone. And that's such an important thing for us to be able to know. So where do things go from here, Dr. Johnson, as we come to the final thought? Well, we've got, in the world stage, we've got terrorism ramping back up. We've got these elections coming up, whatever happens with builders in the Netherlands. Of course, Le Pen coming up. We've got the attacks on Donald Trump. Where do you see the next 6 months of geopolitics going?
The most important thing is that the leftist press has been exposed as completely partisan, that they are very in close connection with Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan. And this has been blown open. And I think this is one of the reasons that people, white people, voted for Trump, despite the program, despite the threat. That this, for the first time, is now a matter of public debate, and that's a very positive thing. And that's not that's an international issue. That these corrupt capitalist entities are running the show, and for the first time ever, that's now a public issue.
Well, we're going to keep battling forward. The truth is being exposed out here. It's a great thing for all of us. And of course, nationalism is on the rise. It's not bound by elections or, moderate parties or anything like that. But the will of the people will be heard, and we will keep marching forward to victory. So, Dr. Johnson, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you to all my listeners. And I hope everyone has a great and wonderful day. Looking forward to being back tomorrow. So have a good one, and hail victory.
Be tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.